Let's start with the halacha side of Tu Bishvat, and then go to the hashkafa side. The Tu Bishvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. When it comes to Trumas and Maisris and other halachas, everything has its cutoff date, because the halachas of Trumas and Maisris are cyclical, meaning that they go by cycle. The first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle have one halacha, the third year a different halacha, and then it goes back the fourth and fifth year, the same as the first 2 years. The sixth year, which this year is the sixth year, has the same halacha as the third year, and then Shemitah has its own special halachas. So you have to know when the new year starts. So for certain things, the new year starts already Rosh Hashanah. Anything that was ready to be gathered before Tishrei, before Rosh Hashanah, is from the old year. Anything that was ready to be gathered only after Tishrei, or was actually gathered after Tishrei, is from the other year. Therefore, if, for instance, you had vegetables for sure, this applies to, you had vegetables that were gathered in Elul, so they last Elul, then they had the halachas of the fifth year of Shemitah. The fifth year, you take off Maisa Rishon and Maisa Sheni. If the vegetables were gathered after Tishrei, after Rosh Hashanah, then they have the din of the sixth year, this year, which is Maisa Rishon and Maisa Ani, not Maisa Sheni. That's for vegetables. The fruit of a tree, the halach is different. There, it doesn't depend on if the fruit grew before Rosh Hashanah or after Rosh Hashanah. It depends if the fruit had chanata, which is when the fruit basically appears on the tree as a fruit before Tu Bishvat or after Tu Bishvat. Anything that had chanata, anything that it's called blossom, it's not blossoming.
What?
Set? Okay. Anything that's set before Tu Bishvat, even though you took it off the tree after Tu Bishvat of this year, was considered from last year's crop. The reason for that, according to one opinion, I could see some guys calling the questions. One of the ideas behind it is the following. Really, the Rosh Hashanah for fruit of the trees is Tishrei. Except, until Tu Bishvat, all the fruit that grows is growing from last year's rains. The rains that were in Tavshin Samech Vav. And therefore, the sap in the tree from Tavshin Samech Vav produces fruit up until Tu Bishvat of Tavshin Samech Zayin. So it's all growing from rains that were before Tishrei. This year's rains, in other words, the rains after Tishrei, only produce fruit that have chanata after Tu Bishvat. So really the Rosh Hashanah is Tishrei, except that Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei is only significant to fruit that has chanata after Tu Bishvat, because the rains from after Tishrei only have an effect on that fruit. So, in any case, so therefore, if you have fruit on a tree that started to grow, that started to form at chanata before Tu Bishvat, it's from last year, and you have to take off Maisa Rishon or Maisa Sheni. If the fruit did not appear on the tree before Tu Bishvat and only started to set after Tu Bishvat, then it's from the coming year. And that is what's it called, Maisa Rishon and Maisa Ani. This applies to all fruit except for Esrogim. Esrogim, there's a big shaila when you go after an Esrog, either from the time that you take it off the tree, that means you had an Esrog that you took off the tree after Tishrei. Maybe that it's what's it called already considered from this year. Maybe that it's considered from last year. Esrogim are a Safik, and we treat them accordingly. And there's another Safik about citrus fruit, whether they all have the same din as an Esrog or not. Citrus fruit, Esrogim are exception. Yeah. But the what's it called, the regular fruit, for the reasons why, because they don't grow like other fruit on what's it called, on rainwater only. They have to be irrigated. An Esrog won't grow just on rainwater. It has to also have irrigation, and therefore it's different. Other citrus fruit also may be different also because of that reason. In any case, that's the basic halachic status of Tu B'Shvat. There are minhagim that have grown up about Tu B'Shvat. That's really what it's all about. So Rosh Hashanah, the Peiros HaElon, but basically for Trumas and Maisers, it also has some effect on Orla. When the 3 years of Orla are up, that's right now too complicated to go into, but it has applications to Orla also. In any case, that's the halachic side of Tu B'Shvat, nothing more than that. Minig-wise, in Chutz Laaretz, they used to eat Peiros of Eretz Yisrael to remember Eretz Yisrael on Tu B'Shvat. That was a minig in Chutz Laaretz, right, to eat various Peiros of Eretz Yisrael. And because in many places they couldn't get Peiros of Eretz Yisrael, and in the winter there were no Peiros available, so they basically ate dried fruits that they had saved from other seasons to remember Eretz Yisrael. And a favorite fruit in Chutz Laaretz that was eaten on Tu B'Shvat was charuvim, a boxer, right? In English, I think it's called St. John's bread. It's a real frum name. And there was always dried, and also had a distinctive odor to it. Yeah. And people ate it, on Tu B'Shvat, as remembrance, I don't know what exactly. This is the Michael Tzadikim, that's the food that, what's it called, that Reb Shimon Bar Yochai ate, charuvim. And it says that Reb Chanina ben Dosa used to exist on that. I'm sure that they needed the way they had it, the Chutz Laaretz. They had the fresh charuvim. That's one minig. I don't know if that minig really applies here in Eretz Yisrael. We don't need to eat dried fruit from Eretz Yisrael on Tu B'Shvat, remember Eretz Yisrael. We can eat nice, fresh, luscious fruit all year round and remember Eretz Yisrael. So here there's another minig that also applied in Chutz Laaretz too. The minig is to daven for an Esrog on Tu B'Shvat. Since this is the time, even though by Esrogim it's not 100% true, but this is the time to think about fruit of the trees, and the Rosh Hashanah of fruit is when they're being judged. So a person should daven that he should get a good, kosher, beautiful Esrog on this coming Sukkot, and daven for it on Tu B'Shvat. There's even different nuschos of the tefillah that you're supposed to say.
Is that a problem on Shabbos?
Is it a problem on Shabbos? No. It's only a problem on Shabbos to daven for things that bring a person tzar. But to daven that you should be able to kind of mitzvah, whatever, that's nothing wrong with that. You can say that to Ratzon. There's lashonos of these tefillahs. What's it called? Okay. That's, I don't remember who sent this to me. That's, yeah. Hey, Shmuel. Shira. It has a dried Esrog in it. This is for years. I've had this. It's in my bookshelf with the Esrog. It's always a chametz. And it has the tefillah with his spalal for the Ben Ishchai. With his spalal al Esrog Noah. I guess this is the Esrog that you're going to have for Sukkot. They doesn't look too either appetizing or kosher. In any case, and they also have a thing of here, another tefillah. No, it's the same tefillah. It's a nice long tefillah about an Esrog. What does this say? It says, Bashochas of the Dots. But that's Ayin Ches. What's Ayin Ches? Eid Chareidus. Okay. In any case, I guess they expect me to eat it. It's, is that mold or? Okay. In any case, that's one minig, that's two minhagim. And there is a minig to eat a lot of different kinds of fruit. This was the minig of the mekubalim. We are not mekubalim. We never had that minig. And to start making that minig is not... I've never let it happen here. A few times the Vat Tarbut wanted to make a Seder for Tu B'Shvat. There is such a thing, and the Mekubalim did it. We are not Mekubalim, so it's not Mekubal by us. With four cups of wine, going from, I think, white wine, red wine to white wine, right? Red wine, then mixed red wine and white wine, and then more mixed, and then completely white wine, four cups, and different kinds of fruit where the peel is on the outside, fruit where the main soul is on the inside, and all different kinds of nuts and things with special tefillahs to say. That's a whole seder, but again, you don't adopt minhagim that are not your minhagim. These were not our minhagim, and just stam to do what people who were mekubalim and knew what they were doing, just to copy that, because, you know, to make a new thing is not, in my estimation, positive, and therefore we didn't do it. But you should realize there is such a thing. The mekubalim in Tzfas originated it. They used to do it, and matovu manoi. If you have that minig, that's fine. And Tu B'Shvat, you should be careful not to eat fruit that, along with the fruit, you get bugs. Right? That's no mitzvah to eat. There are certain dried fruits that you should stay away from, even if they have a hechsher. That's figs, dried dates, but they're the ones that are mushed together in a whole thing. I think they're figs, mostly figs. Usually, though, ones with hechsherin, other kinds of dried fruit, they have a hechsher. They can be checked. You should check them and make sure that they're not full of bugs. Anything else? Shechiyanu. Shechiyanu, you have a lot of things that you have to make a shechiyanu on. You make one shechiyanu for all of them. Not only that, if they were all around and you decided not to eat some of them, the shechiyanu you made on the ones that you did eat help for the ones that you didn't eat too. And the next time you eat them, you don't make a shechiyanu. On fruits that are dried, that you can't tell the difference between the new fruits, the old fruits, and the fruits like that are around all the time, dried, the time you don't make a shechiyanu on them, because it's not nicker which are the new and which are the old. Okay, that pretty much covers the halachic and minik side of Tu B'Shvat.
We get a shechiyanu on fruits like watermelon or adama.
Yeah, there's no difference between a bari pri ha'etz or a bari pri ha'adama. On vegetables, you don't make a shechiyanu, but on fruits, even if they grow from the ground and they make a bari pri ha'adama, and they come seasonally, they're seasonal fruits. So there's a new crop of watermelons here for sure. It's like that. Right, there's a season when there's no watermelons, and then there's a season when you can get watermelons. You make a shechiyanu on the first watermelons. Okay. Even if you ate them within a year, that's a fallacy. The shechiyanu is not for fruits that you haven't eaten for a year. They're for fruits that renew themselves year by year. Even if you ate them within the year, but this is a new crop, you make a shechiyanu. Okay. We've always spoken about the idea that Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av have special significance, that there's a connection between them. Tu B'Shvat is 40 days before the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan. Okay, that means Pesach is very close in coming. The Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan is the 25th day of Adar. Now, this only works out in a regular year, not a leap year. The 25th day of Adar was the day the world was created, and according to the opinion that says the world was created in Nisan. There's a machlokas, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says the world was created in Nisan, and Rabbi Lezer said the world was created in Tishri. We'll see in one second how you can argue when the world was created, right? And both of them be right. We'll see that Tosa speaks about that. That there's a very interesting answer to that question. But in any case, there's an argument. So if the world was created in Tishrei, we know that it doesn't mean that the world was created on the first day of Tishrei. It means that man was created on the first day of Tishrei, and the world was created 6 days earlier on the 25th day of Elul. If the world was created in Nisan, therefore, it's the same thing. Man was created on the first day of Nisan, and the world was created 6 days earlier on the 25th day of Adar. Now, if you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Adar, you get Tu Bishvat. If you subtract 40 days from the 25th day of Elul, you get Tu B'Av, 15th day of Av. So already you see a connection between the 15th of Av, which is 40 days before the creation of Tishrei, and Tu B'Shvat, which is 40 days before the creation of Nisan. Now Chazal say that 40 days before a child is conceived, there's already in the Shemayim a declaration what who's going to marry and other declarations or whatever. So they already start preparing for a person who's coming into this world 40 days before. Therefore, the Sfarim say that before the world was created, God already started to prepare 40 days before. The preparation was 40 days before. So the preparation for the creation of Nisan is Tu B'Shvat. The preparation for the creation of Tishrei is Tu B'Av. But the similarity, the connection goes way beyond that. But first let's discuss how you could have an argument whether the world was created in Tishrei or in Nisan. Tosha says they're both true, and the world was created twice. It was created b'machshava. It was created mentally in Tishrei. And that's why in Tishrei we say, Hayom Haras Olam. Today the world became pregnant, was impregnated, not born. And it actually was created in Nisan. The Maisa was in Nisan. Now, on the surface, that sounds wild because, I mean, it was created in Machshava and then in Maisa. So the way I understand that is the following, and I think it's true. And that is the following. We're not talking about two different times of creation, two different acts of creation. We're talking about two dimensions of creation, which patterns itself into something that you're all familiar with. It says, Bereshis Bara Elokim, right, that originally God intended to create the world, the Machshava Allah Libaros B'Midas Hadin. God intended in his mind, right, theoretically, to create the world with Midas Hadin, but L'maisa, when he created it, he added the Midah of Rachamim. Okay, so we see already, there was a machshava, a mabriya b'machshava, that was the briya of din, and then the maisha, the Rabban Shem, added rachamim. Now that doesn't mean that he changed his mind, and therefore we have a world where there's din and rachamim together. But the original thought, basically, is of no consequence, because God changed his mind. That's absurd. So what it means is the following. This, the Shalach HaKadosh says, that the world was created on two levels, two dimensions. There is a Olam HaMachshava, God's original thought. There is such a dimension of the world on din alone. And people who can exist like that exist totally on din. They get no mercy. And that's good for them. Because the whole purpose of this world, is that you should earn the Olam Haba instead of getting it for free. So the more you get it, because you deserve it, you don't get any help, right? The more, the better it is. Your olam haba is totally earned. True, you may be punished severely in this world for the small sins that you have, because there's no mercy. But for the next world, you get everything because you earned it, you deserved it, you got absolutely no help. So that's beneficial for somebody who can live like that. But God saw that most people can't exist. They wouldn't get anything. They'd lose everything. So better they should get something diminished than nothing at all. So he added mercy. Mercy means you get help. But if you get help, then it's not totally earned. It's not totally deserved. So it diminishes a little bit from your olam haba. So people who can exist on that level, get that level. That's called lemaisa. That's the actual creation. But there is a dimension of creation that was called the machshava. Now originally there was no time. When God created the world, he also created time. So these two dimensions originally existed together. They weren't at different times. And the one dimension was called the dimension of Tishrei, which is Din. The other dimension was called the dimension of Nisan, which is Rachamim. And they coincided. They just were two different levels of creation. Somebody who could live on this dimension got that dimension. Somebody who could live on this dimension got this dimension. After the world was created, the dimension of Tishrei became a time zone called Tishrei. The dimension of Nisan became a time zone called Nisan. They became separated. So there's a Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei that corresponds to that dimension, the Din. That's why the Yemei HaDin, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, are in Tishrei. It's a Yom HaDin. And Nisan is a Yom is Rachamim. In fact, the word Pesach, which is basically the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, is Pesach means Rachamim. The Targum says, Pesach means he had Rachamim, Chais, he had mercy. Doesn't mean to skip over or pass over, that's a different opinion. But according to the Targum, the word Pesach means Rachamim. And therefore also, whenever there's Din, the Aleph Beis is backwards. Shem Hashem backwards represents Din. Aleph Beis backwards represents Din. Tishrei is Tav, Shin, Resh, backwards. Nisan is called Aviv. Aviv is Aleph Beis, is forwards. So that's Racham. Based on this idea, it comes out that the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Din is Tu B'Av. The preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim is Tu B'Shvat. Now we'll see another connection between them. Both of them have to do with trees. Tu B'Av is the last time for cutting trees for the altar, for the Mizbeach. Because during the height of the summer, the trees are dry. And that worms don't form in dry wood. So you can cut the trees and use the wood for the altar because wormy wood is possible. And you can assume there's no worms. But after Tu B'Av, the sun got less strong, right? The nights start getting longer. The days start getting shorter right around Tu B'Av. And therefore, the sun isn't at its peak. It's not the hot summer. And the sap starts to go into the trees, and there could be worms. So they stop cutting wood. So Tu B'Av has to do with dry trees that are cut for their wood to burn on the Mizbeach. That's a symbol of Din. Fire is a symbol of Din. Burning wood on the Mizbeach, we'll see in one second, is the way to prepare for Din. Tu B'Shvat also has to do with trees. But here on the other spectrum, it's when the sap goes into the trees, they're not dead wood, but they are, what's it called, they are luscious trees that begin to produce fruit. That's the other end of the spectrum. That's water. Water has to do with rachamim. Fire is din, water is rachamim. The water in the trees is the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of rachamim. The cutting of the trees, burning them, dry wood, that's preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Din. Now let's take it to the next step. Trees are a symbol of human beings. Ha'adam meitz ha'sadeh. Okay? That's the way that the Gemara says in Tainis, that people are compared to trees, even though if you look at the pasuk, and we've explained it in many ways, it doesn't say that. So it's just the opposite. It says when you make a siege on a city, you should not cut down the fruit trees to make the siege, right? To build the siege. Because ha'adam mitzasada is then the trees, people that are coming to fight you. You have to cut down the trees. Fight the people, don't fight the trees. That's what the pasuk means. So it said, Loshen bitmiya, ha'adam mitzasada is the tree, then a person. So in the pasuk shot of the sentence, it's just the opposite. Trees and people have no connection. Trees aren't people, and people aren't trees. But if you read it without that bitmiya, ha'adam mitzasada, man is like a tree. So the drash in the Gemara is to read it the other way. And therefore there's a connection between trees and people. The connection has two connections. One connection is the actual configuration of the tree, how the tree looks. It looks like a person. And the other is the lesson that you can learn from a tree also gives you a, what's it called, an understanding of what a person's supposed to be. Let's start with the configuration of the tree, because that's what Tu B'Av is. Tu B'Av deals with the wood of the tree, not its fruit-bearing qualities, it's just the wood, the tree itself. How does a tree remind you of people? Because it looks like a person. Think about it, right? The tree has arms, legs, a trunk, roots, except, like the Maharal says, it's upside down. If you would stand on your head and spread apart your feet and pick up your arms, you'd look like a tree, right? People who play trees in plays, right, so they pick their arms up like this, and that's supposed to be a tree. It's not really the way a tree looks. They would stand on their head, pick up their arms and their feet, they'd look much more like a tree. They'd have their root, which is the head, with the root hairs on it, down on the ground. You stuck your head in the ground, so you'd plant your root in the ground, and then your limbs and trunk would come up. So then you'd look like a tree. So really, a person is an upside-down tree. Why? Because a tree is rooted in the physical world. So its roots are in the ground. Human beings, though, are rooted in the heavens. We are not physical beings. We are spiritual beings with a physical body. So our head, which represents our seichel, our neshama, is facing up. It's rooted in the heavens. And our body grows down from there. So we're really a right-side-up tree. It's just that the medium is upside down. The heavens are up there, and that's where we're growing down from, instead of like a tree growing up from the earth. So we're really a right-side-up tree if we would be in the heavens. And therefore, it would follow that if we taka would be in the next world, then taka would be on our heads. Well, our heads are down, and our limbs up. And there are midrashim that say that that's how a person is in the next world. In the next world, you're on your head. Don't worry if you can't stand on your head, because in the next world there's no up, down. You're a spiritual being, so it's easy to get on your head. Right? In this physical world, it's difficult, because you're not supposed to have your head in the ground. You're supposed to be standing on your feet. Some of the, what's it called, one of the rise to that, one of the sources is in Paneach Rosa, Medrash Paneach Rosa in Parshas Chayisara. It says that when Rivka first saw Yitzchak, her chosen, she fell off the camel. She was astounded about something. And the Paneach Rosa says that Yitzchak Avinu, after the Akedah, he died by the Akedah. And he was resurrected. But he needed shikum. He needed to be rehabilitated. So God put him in Gan Eden for 2 years to rehabilitate him. And the moment that he was coming out of Gan Eden was the exact moment that Rivka passed by with Eliezer, and he was just emerging from Gan Eden. And the Medrash says, and as is well known, the people in Gan Eden walk on their heads. And at that moment, Yitzchak still hadn't gotten turned around, and he was walking on his head as he came out of Gan Eden. And when Rivka saw her chosen walking on his head, she fell off the camel. Now, could be she fell off the camel so she could get on her head. Mm-hmm. Right? She said, at least that's the way he walks. Why shouldn't I be a nice wife and walk the same way? So she fell on her head too. But in any case, that's what the Midrash says, and it's clear then that in the Olam HaEmes, in the spiritual world, people walk on their head. Then they tackle right side up trees. The only reason we're upside down is because we're in a physical world. So another application of that, the many, but for our purposes now, we'll just mention one or two. Therefore, if you want to maintain a spiritual posture in this world, you can do one of two things. You can't get on your head, right? Because that wouldn't imply that, what's it called, that you're rooted in the spiritual world. You have to stand straight up or your root is in the heavens. But on the other hand, it looks like your root is your foot if you compare it to a regular tree and you look like you're upside down. So how do you make it clear that this is your root and that is your limb? And you're only upside down because you're rooted in the heavens. And your limbs grow towards the physical. Whenever you want to make it clear that you're a spiritual being, and this is your root, and that's your limb, you cover your feet, you uncover your feet, and you cover your head. Because a tree, its roots are covered, its limbs are uncovered. So normally we go with our feet covered and our heads uncovered. Right? Because for all practical purposes, we have to be on our limbs in this world, not on our root. Because our root has to be facing up. But if you want to make it clear this is the root and not the limb, and that's the limb and not the root, you uncover your feet, and you cover your head. So do we do that on Yom Kippur? Right? You cover your head, you uncover your feet, to say, I'm a spiritual being. In the Beis HaMikdash, they took off their shoes, covered their head, I'm a spiritual being. But Kohanim, when they duchen, they, what's it called, a person doesn't want to do yibum, doesn't want to, empathize with the soul of his departed brother, he take off his shoes, make him more spiritual. Whatever you want to maintain, a more spiritual, an oven wants to get closer to the neshama, to commiserate with it, takes off his shoes, covers his head, ituf, is covering his head. So we always cover our head. Men with a yarmulke, women cover their hair. And when you want to be extra spiritual, you take off your shoes too. But we show that this is the root. This is what's covered. Not necessarily that our root is our feet. The feet is only the limb. And we're growing down, not growing up. Okay, in any case, so the configuration of a tree, if you look at the tree, you can see what a real human being is, what a tzaddik is. And that is the letters of a tree. The letters of a tree are ayin and tzadi. And even though the letter is tzadi and not tzadik, but the Gemara says that tzadi stands for tzadik. So therefore, if you look at the letters of the tree, the letters of the word, it spells out the word ayin. Ayin means look. Tzadik. And you'll see a tzadik. Look at the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. In fact, the letters themselves look like trees. The ayin looks like a tree. It has two branches and little leaves, right? The tagim and a bark. And the tzaddik also has two branches and a bark, and goes down to the roots. So if you look at the tree, you'll see a tzaddik. How? Like we just said. Look at a tree, see what its roots are, see what the ikar is. What's the tafel? If you cut off the branches, the tree still lives. If you cut off the roots, you killed the tree. So the roots are the main thing. Now look at a person. You'll see what's his ikar. If his ikar is his neshama, his head, and that's his root, then he's a tzaddik. If the ikar is his feet, right, and you consider that the root, and he's rooted in the physical world, then he's not a tzaddik. So if you look at a tree, you look at a person, you see the configuration, you see that his root is up and the tree's root is down, you know what a tzaddik is. Ayin tzaddik. On Tu B'Av, we take the wood of the tree, cut it down. How do you prepare for din? Nobody can be zoche can merit pure din. Me amod lefanecha b'din, says on Rosh Hashanah. Right? We all need rachamim. We have to consider that we need rachamim. So, therefore, how do you prepare for din? By totally subjugating yourself to Hashem.
What about Amram?
Okay, we're saying that's exception, few people in history. We're talking about the majority of people. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to have rachamim, right? But the majority of people in the world need rachamim too. They're only individuals, Yaakov Avinu, Rabbi Akiva, who are able to exist on pure din. But those are the exceptions. The rule, right? All the other millions and millions of people need rachamim. So, therefore, if you want to prepare for din, the way to prepare for din is putting yourself in Hashem's hands. Totally subjugating yourself, breaking yourself, feeling that you're not worthy, and putting yourself into God's presence. What is that symbolized by? Cutting down a tree, cutting it into pieces, putting it on the altar, burning it to Hashem. That's the preparation for the Yom HaDin, totally subjugating, negating yourself, breaking yourself up, and going into the fire of that din, and then connecting yourself to Hashem. That's Tu B'Av. On the other hand, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us rachamim, and He wants us to be dynamic. He wants us to do also, not just to negate ourselves. He wants us to be mevatel ourselves, but He wants us to be dynamic also. He wants us to bring out our fruit. So therefore, how do you prepare for the Rosh Hashanah of rachamim? There you prepare for the fruit, with the sap, with the water that goes into the tree. And here we celebrate a different kind of tree. The tree that's just the wood is called an etz. The tree that produces fruit is more called an ilan. And that's why Tu B'Shvat is called Rosh Hashanah le'ilanos. An ilan is a fruit-bearing tree. And even though you'll tell me there's what's called ilanei srak, trees that don't bear fruit, and they're called ilanos, but the Gemara says that in the future, all ilanei srak will bear fruit. So they're fruit-bearing trees. An age can be a piece of lumber, piece of wood. It has nothing to do with the fruit-bearing qualities. It's just the configuration, the wood of the tree. Masha'enken, an ilan is more specifically the fruit-bearing qualities of the tree. Even though there are trees that in this world don't bear fruit, they will. They have that quality also. They're called ilanos. They're ilanos, srak, but they're ilanos. In any case, so on Tu B'Shvat, we're more concerned with the ilan part of the tree, not the eitz. Now we said eitz is ayin tzadik. Look, you'll see the tzadik. Ilan, take the letters, just hit me one day when I was driving, and years ago. Take the word ilan, right, and take the nun, put it away on the side, okay? And you'll have now, what's it called, another nun. Take the aleph and put it on the side. You have three letters left, yud, lamed, and nun. How much do they equal together? Yud is 10, lamed is 30, is 40, and nun is 50, is how much? 90. Which letter is 90? Tzadik. Now put the aleph back. What do you have? Eitz. But with an aleph. Aleph, tzadik. If you put the yud, lamed, nun together, you get a tzadik. Put the aleph back from the ilan, you get an eitz. But it's an aleph tzadik, not an ayin tzadik. The word aleph, it means to learn. So if you look at the tree, the configuration of the tree, you'll see a tzadik. If you learn about the fruit-bearing qualities of the tree, you'll learn about a tzadik. Aleph tzadik. Learn about it. You won't see it from the configuration of the fruit, but you'll see it from learning about the concept of fruit. To make a long story short, what is the lesson we learn from fruit? It says that Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba is the fruit of Olam Hazeh. They're not two different worlds. But you prepare in this world bears fruit in the next world. In this world, we plant the seeds, we do all the preparation, and we create Olam Haba. We create that fruit in the world to come. So the basic idea is that this world is not a place to enjoy per se. That's not the goal. Here is the world to prepare. And the fruit we eat in the world to come. This world is the world of, preparation. That's the world where we benefit from the preparation we did here. So that is the Olam Hazeh, a prose door, b'fnei Olam Haba. This world is Erev Shabbos, next world is Shabbos. This world is like the Yabosha, that's the Yam. Here's the preparatory place. Ayom La'Sosam, here you do mitzvahs. There, you watch it called, you get the reward. So the fruit is the next world. And the preparation for that fruit is this world. So if you learn about the concept of fruit, you'll see what a tzaddik is. Aleph, tzaddik, is the word Elon. In addition to that, I was thinking, there are four mitzvahs, basically, four kinds of mitzvahs that the Torah gave with fruit. And each one teaches us a little bit more how to see this concept that this world is the world of preparation and the next world is the world where we have the benefit. What are those mitzvahs? The first is bikur, or truma, or challah. They all have something in common. They're called rachis. They're all the first. Take all the first and dedicate them to God. Meaning, when you start with something, the fruit, remember that how you start in this world, right? What you dedicate to God here is going to be make a difference in how you end up over there. So all the first should be holy. Start off on the right leg. So that's the idea of dedicating the first towards God. Then there's the Meiser. The Meiser. Take a tenth. The tenth is the goal. You start off good, but you finish good too. Starting and finishing. And then what comes in between automatically be okay. If you start okay and you end okay, usually what's in the middle is okay. The tenth represents the finishing. Why? Because from 1 to 9, all the numbers are separate. 10 unites all those numbers into one unity in one purpose that's in service of Hashem. Under this, that's why 10 is a number of Kedusha. 10 is a minion. It's the conglomeration of many things into one unity. So the first, that's holy. The tenth is holy. That's Meiser Rishon. Then we have Meiser Sheni. Meiser Sheni, you bring to Yerushalayim and you eat it there. What's the purpose of Meiser Sheni? The Torah says that you should learn how to serve Hashem. Because you'll see the Kohanim, the Levim, and you'll learn, you get what's it called, the Mansilma, the Yerush Hashem Lokecha, the Bin Yerushalayim, the Yeshivas, the Sanhedrin, the Kohanim, the Levim. You get from the atmosphere, from the environment, learning how to do it. If you have the right hashkafa, you dedicate the first to Hashem. You dedicate the tenth, but you have to know how to dedicate it. So you have to learn. So the next step is learning. That's represented by Meiser Sheni. And then you have to realize that it's not just you. You have to help other people too. You can't just worry about your own Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. You have a responsibility to teach others, to help others, to give tzedakah to others. That's Meiser Oni. In addition to that, you have to give Meiser to help others do these things too. It's not just your, it's other people too. And those are the mitzvahs basically that have to do with fruit. The Rishon, the Rashis, Truma, Bikurim, and so on. And then the Meiser Rishon, Meiser Sheni, Meiser Oni. If you would give letters to represent these mitzvahs, so the first would be Aleph. The tenth, Meiser Rishon, would be Yud. The mitzvah of Meiser Sheni, which is Laman Tilman, you should learn to serve Hashem, is Lamed, Limud, learning. And the Ani is represented by the letter Nun, Nofil, person who falls. That's why the central letter in Ani is a Nun. Because Nun represents somebody who's falling, who needs to be supported. So put those all those letters together. Those are the letters of the mitzvahs of fruit. You have Aleph, Yod, Lamed, Nun. It's Elon. So the Elon is Aleph, Tzaddik, learn about the fruit and you'll see the tzaddik, and the way to learn is through these mitzvahs. Aleph Yud Lamed Nun, which spells Elam. So on Tu Bishvat, we're preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of Rachamim, where God gave us the ability that we can be dynamic. Took us out of the Mitzrayim, gave us a Torah, and we can do. It's not just that you have to negate yourself to Hashem, but you can be dynamic in serving Hashem and bring out your fruit. The way to do that is to understand what that fruit is. That the fruit is the next world. This world is the world of preparation. And by understanding that, then you prepare yourself for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan.